Before we get started, I just want to say thank you ever so much for your incredible support. This podcast is gaining new momentum all the time and it's being spread everywhere. So extremely grateful for your support with Patreon, donations, signing up for membership or my newsletter, which is the way forward for this podcast. So really grateful.
Welcome to Light on Conspiracies, the place where truth and love transcend the darkness. Your host, Peace Award-winning researcher, Ole Damagod. To listen to this full interview, just go to lightonconspiracies.com and subscribe.
I'm here today with a Canadian high school dropout. Not just any dropout. I'm here with John Barber, a Canadian who actually changed the face of American TV and is recognized as the godfather of reality TV after having created, co-hosted, and written the hit show Real People, the number one hit show on the NBC for 3 years, and he was with it all the time. He's been involved in media and films as an actor, producer, co-writer, you name it, for many, many years. And he was also the host for several of the big shows. He also won 5 Emmy Awards. And in one of the shows, he received guests like Cesar Chavez and Muhammad Ali and so on. He's also had appeared regularly on shows like The Dean Martin Show in Las Vegas. He opened for Robert Goulet, Robert Darin, and Diane Warwick. And on 2 major comedy albums, It's Tough to Be White with liner notes by Dick Gregory and I Met a Man I Didn't Like with liner notes by Neil Simon. In 2014, after he retired, he produced the worldwide critically acclaimed The Last Word of the Assassination, featuring the Garrison Tapes, which is by many one of the best documentary ever made on the murder of President Kennedy, and with an incredible panel of researchers, including Dick Russell, Joan Miller, and Jim Morris. He's now currently here again with yet another amazing documentary, which we're going to hear a lot about today. So I really want to welcome you, John. Thank you so much for taking the time.
They still went to war. These people are war criminals. Well, I just received word yesterday from Toronto that my hometown, the Toronto International Film Festival, turned it down. They said they didn't have room for it.
Oh, you must be kidding.
Yeah. And then New Orleans turned it down a week ago, so I don't think any film festival in North America is going to accept the film. I sent it to San Sebastian 3 weeks ago because the first one won 25 years ago. It'd be nice if the second one did well this time. And then I also, because there's so many people in the British Isles to whom I'm sending DVDs, I entered it in the Glasgow Film Festival. So we'll see what happens.
No, I tell you, these times, everything is totally upside down. If you post an image of a baby with a kitten or something like that, it will get you 2 million hits or views. And if you say anything important, it's censored, stopped, blocked. In one way, it's a compliment to you and your work that they refuse to show it.
Well, the interesting thing is that George Knapp, who is the Sunday night host of Coast to Coast, he'd been ordered by George Noory never to have me on his show. But George is the last of the really good independent investigative journalists. He called me yesterday, took me over to his station and filmed me for 45 minutes because he's going to do a story about me and my film, which he will air next week and send to 200 CBS affiliates around the country. And that's even better than winning a film festival because Amazon is, the movie is doing just fantastic on Amazon. And I'm working now with a company in Canada to get it on Netflix and iTunes. And if that happens early, it could become huge in spite of the resistance.
Exactly, exactly. I tell you, we are at a point, we're in front of a wall, but the wall is starting to crack down. And once it cracks, things like this documentary will make a massive impact.
I sent a note to the New Orleans Film Festival. I don't know if you read any of my Facebook posts, but I sent them a note because New Orleans was, of course, first of all, the home of Jim Garrison. So that surprised me enormously that they turned it down. And also, it was the second most important city to Langley, Virginia, where they planned the murder of John Kennedy. And when the story about Garrison's investigation into Clay Shaw broke, he had only spent $8,000 of the city's money, and the city cut off his funding. But the citizens all got together and formed a committee of businessmen, as you can see in the documentary, and they supported him. They sent in thousands and thousands of dollars. A matter of fact, one of the businessmen on the committee went to Florida and appeared on Larry King's show early in his career. He had this really good radio show in Miami, and this fella, who was quite successful and helping Garrison, said that they had been denied funds by the city. And Americans sent in $50,000 to Larry King for Jim Garrison, but Garrison never got the money. Larry King was in debt deeply. He was a bad horse gambler, and he used the money to pay off his debts. And you see in the film, he was only accused of stealing $5,000. But in any event, I told the committee heads at the festival that it would have been a public service to air this documentary for those citizens who were really supporting Garrison and interested in the case. But then I added, but I can understand it would be an embarrassment to the establishment because of the supposed reputation that fell on New Orleans because of Jim Garrison's loss of the case. But he only lost the conspiracy case. He won the perjury case. And I pointed out that if you're a tourist and you go to New Orleans, on all of their tourist maps, you cannot find the site for Jim Garrison's gravestone, which is very impressive. We show it at the end of the movie, just before the credits. This large tombstone, and on the top it says, "Let justice be done, though the heavens fall."
Oh, heavens fall.
Which is chapter 10 in the film. But then I pointed out to them, but in that tourist map, they should show you where you can find the gravestone of gangster Carlos Marcello. So that really tells you all you need to know about the city of New Orleans.
But don't you think, John, that both New Orleans and Dallas as well, they're trying to like erase this patch of shame the way they see it and try to make people just forget about all kind of connections with this assassination instead of being part of trying to expose what actually happened and then honor the people that did. I mean, they almost sacrificed their lives and careers and everything to do
well,
that.
Well, certainly they've done that because to them, it's a black mark. It's a negative for the cities, and so they're trying to wipe it out. If you go right now to Amazon, the site for the film, the last review is just amazing. It's from Steve Jaffe. Steve Jaffe was one of Jim Garrison's chief investigators. As a matter of fact, he was the one that went to Paris to retrieve the Zapruder film. When Garrison won his case against Time Life magazine, Time Life was denying him the Zapruder film for his trial. And it went to the Supreme Court, as you see in the movie, and he won that. The copy of the film that Time Life sent to Garrison was unviewable and unwatchable. It was just so fouled up. So Steve Jaffe went to Europe, went to Paris, and brought back a pristine copy of the Zapruder film. Well, Jim Garrison always thought a shot had been fired from the sewer. And the reason for that, when he read the Warren Report, Clint Hill, one of the Secret Service agents, said there was a sound of an echo in one of the shots. And Garrison thought, well, that would only come from a sewer because there was no echo with any of the other shots. So he sent Steve Jaffe to Dallas to look into it. I have photographs. Now, Stephen Jaffe was the photo analyst also for Garrison, who proved when Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested, they showed him these backyard photos of him with the commie newspapers and the rifle. And he said, they're all fake and I'll prove it. Now, when Oswald was arrested, he had thousands of dollars worth of camera equipment with him. So he was a photo expert, but of course he never lived to prove it because Ruby shot him. But in the film, Stephen Jaffe proves it. But anyway, when he went to Dallas, I have photographs of him in the sewer. I had not heard from Stephen in 2.5 or 3 years. He called me a couple of days ago because he had just seen the film and he was absolutely overwhelmed by the film. He paid it the largest compliment I've received to date. That compliment, he called it a complete case for the prosecution. And he says, John Barber does in 2 hours and 10 minutes more than the History Channel did in 9 hours with the men who killed Kennedy. A compliment doesn't get any better than that. Except that one guy, the very first guy to review the film, said, even if you do not believe John Barber's conclusions or Garrison's conclusions about a conspiracy, just the information about the growth of fake media, which plagues us today, is worth the price of admission to see the film. So, but when Stephen was talking to me, and so I ultimately booked him on my show, he's going to be on in about a month, he told me that the way he got to the sewer was right near where Zapruder stood to take his footage, the famous Zapruder footage of the assassination. He said there was a manhole cover, and he lifted the manhole cover and slid down the sewer to the sewer by the road, which was only about 15 feet from where John Kennedy was. And in The Men Who Killed Kennedy, there's a wonderful 8-minute segment from this chemical engineer who seemed to prove that one of the shots did come from the sewer. Now, I didn't include that in the documentary because it was just too complicated scientifically, and I didn't want to just have anything weird distracting from telling a straight story about Jim Garrison, his investigation, and how he was sabotaged by the government and the media. And I must say, I was also disappointed, as I just told you, about the Toronto Film Festival. So anyway, the film on Amazon is doing gangbusters. And outfits like Netflix and iTunes are so big, they do not talk to ordinary film producers or directors like myself. They talk only to aggregators. The largest supplier to Netflix is a Canadian company called Juice. And next week, myself and my editor, Dan Jacobs, are having a conference call with Juice because they love the film and they want to submit it to Netflix. This is a process that takes a couple of months. But I tell you, Ole, if it ends up on Netflix, even though I won't get much money for it, it could become truly, truly huge.
The way it deserves to be. I mean, because what you a part of exposing is absolutely groundbreaking. And if you look at modern history, there are two massive turning points. One of them was the assassination of JFK. The other one was 9/11, but carried out by the same forces. And that assassination in Dallas on the 22nd of November is extremely important to expose, because if we follow the bloody footprints from that one onwards, it will help to uncover so much more. So I really honor you for your efforts in exposing it. This is your second documentary. You made it the first documentary about the assassination of Kennedy in the 1990s, I believe. Also there, you met some of the really incredible research and very heavyweight individuals in this whole drama. Would you mind telling us a bit about that?
Well, I guess the two most interesting ones that I met were probably Jim Mars, who sadly died a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Jim Mars was an absolute bear when it came to uncovering the pearls of proof about the assassination of John Kennedy and the complicity of the government and the media, both in the murder and then in the cover-up of the murder. But as a person, he was a teddy bear of a man. He was a teddy bear with a beard. But I would think that he was probably, along with Mark Lane and Mae Brussel. Mae Brussel is in the film, and so is Jim Garrison. In the film, there is also a tribute to all of these wonderful researchers, Sylvia Mars, one of them, Accessories After the Fact, and of course, Mae Brussel, who was on the radio for years, and she did on the radio what Mark Lane did in books, and then there was Penn Jones. There were so many of them. One of the best and one of the most disappointing, of course, was Harold Weisberg. Harold Weisberg was a former intelligence officer who self-published a series of books called Whitewash, and they are totally brilliant. And for some reason or other, when Oliver Stone was making his movie, Harold Weisberg was one of the minor consultants on the film, and he didn't like being a minor consultant, and he got upset, and his ego got in the way, and he took the script, and he turned it over to George Lardner, who is a CIA lackey for the Washington Post, and in the film, you see, he immediately starts attacking Oliver Stone over making this thing. He called it Dallas in Wonderland. And this was long before Oliver even got to shoot one frame of a film. So he was sabotaged severely. But fortunately for me and Jim Garrison in history, he got the movie out. And had it not been for his movie, I would not have been able to make my two documentaries. And then, of course, they were compelled in the 1990s to create, the Congress had to sign the Assassinations Act, and they had to release documents, which, as you and I speak, are being released today, October 26th, the president, who may still be Donald Trump, is supposed to either release all of them or suppress the release of them. But we will never see all the documents. There's no question about that. And Garrison always said it was just an element of the CIA that murdered him. It wasn't the entire CIA. And of course, they are going to protect the CIA because there are billions of dollars worth of jobs there. We will never find out the truth from the government. We just never will find out the truth. But one of the things that I like a lot about the film, and I hate to say this because it's my own film, it is the only movie that shows this a resolution, because Jim Garrison solved the case in 1967 when he arrested Clay Shaw. And you see the newscast in the documentary about him announcing that. And we prove it because with the release of some of the documents in the 1990s, we found one dated 1967 where the mucky mucks at the CIA are suggesting to the CIA, or telling the legal departments and the lawyers at the CIA, that they had better help Clay Shaw back in 1967, otherwise Jim Garrison was going to get a conviction for a conspiracy. So that alone proves that Garrison was right. And so there you go. But the one thing that I like about the film is in 1980 when I did the interview with him, and I was the only one to whom he gave an interview in the 10 years following the Clay Shaw trial. And in that interview, he hands me a piece of paper with a bunch of names on it. And he said, these are people, John, who should be arrested and tried for the murder of John Kennedy. Well, most of those people have died, but a lot of them haven't. 10 of them are still around. And so we put together an old-fashioned FBI wanted poster with the 10 most wanted and the 4 at the top, the most important. And they are Dan Rather, who obviously lied to about us when he said in 1963, a day or two after the assassination, that the bullet that hits his head throws his head violently forward. We offered him $25,000 to answer just one question. Who was in the room with him when he looked at the Zapruder film? Of course, he turned us down. The other is Bill Moyers, who ordered the bubble top removed. Then, of course, the other and probably second most important, or maybe most important, is George Bush Sr., because George Bush Sr., when he was at the CIA, one of the only people his age who can't remember where he was on November 22nd, 1963, when there are photographs of him in Dallas. But the code name for the Bay of Pigs was codename Zapata, which was the name of his oil company. The two boats they used were called the Barbara and the Houston. Barbara, his wife, Houston, where he lived. So it proved that he was a mucky muck at the Central Intelligence Agency. And of course, the fourth person that they should question is Barack Obama. As president of the United States, the Justice Department was ordered by the House Select Committee to further investigate the murder of John Kennedy, which they said was a conspiracy because there were more than four gunshots fired. And in the film, Jim Garrison says, but nobody reported this. You still hear the rubbish to this day about the Warren report when it was overturned 12 years later by the House Select Committee on Assassination. I think that Barack Obama should be questioned because he signed executive orders sending drones over to North Africa to kill an innocent 16-year-old American boy. And the most important murder in American history was that of his predecessor, John Kennedy. And he has to be asked why he did not sign an executive order ordering the release of those documents. There have been a couple of films about CIA-created presidents. I can't name a couple of them right now, but it is entirely possible that one of them was Barack Obama.
George Bush Sr., I must say, it doesn't matter what crime I look into on an international level, he's almost always there in the background. So in my opinion, he's a super, super, super criminal that really should be facing very serious charges. But John, how was it for you to meet Garrison the first time?
Well, it was overwhelming. To me, the three geniuses that I've met in my life, true geniuses. One was Jim Garrison. The other was Buckminster Fuller, scientist who created the geodesic dome. And Buckminster Fuller, I interviewed for an hour back in 1970, and he said one of the most interesting things I ever heard. He said, John, America is the most underdeveloped country in the world. And I said, how can you say that? He said, you know, that the United States has the technical capability and the talent to feed and house and minister health to the entire population of the world. That's how smart and industrious America is. But the fact that they don't do that and suppress it and suppress other countries who try to do it shows that we are the least developed country in the world, which is a brilliant observation back in 1970, which holds true to this very day. The other genius I met is my son, Christopher, who is currently a writer and co-executive producer of a show called The Criminal Minds. His very first job when he graduated from Stanford was working on part one of the Garrison tapes. And within a couple of months, he knew as much or more about the investigation by Jim Garrison of the murder and the murder of John Kennedy as I did. He was just amazing. But Garrison, I'll tell you, sometimes, Ola, you can be talking to somebody and they can say something to you that has such a ring of truth in it, even though it is unrelated to documents, that you realize this man is telling you the truth. Now, Jim Garrison, as you see in the film, he's a former FBI agent. He was a lieutenant colonel or something in the Air Force. He was at Dachau when they liberated Dachau at the end of the Second World War. There's only one picture of him in his office. It was a picture of him sitting on the fence with Dachau behind him, and he had written, "Lest we ever forget." He wasn't aligned to any political party at all, and he never looked for campaign contributions. He just would get on television and talk, and he was so powerful that people voted for him. Well, being this conservative person in actuality, I asked him, how on earth, because he believed the Warren Report. As you recall him saying in the film, he said, John, I believed in authority because I'd been in the FBI, I'd been in the military, and it never occurred to me to question my government in the case of the assassination when they published the Warren Report. And then, of course, it never occurred to me that he would even be involved in the assassination. And it wasn't till an accidental meeting with Congressman Hale Boggs, who was the only dissenting member of the Warren Commission report, that he decided to read the Warren Report. And then, as he saw in the film, he got three copies of the 26 volumes. He had one in the car, one in the office, in one of his home, and he absolutely memorized it. So I said to him, Mr. Garrison, what on earth ever made you think you could take on the federal government once you discovered the truth? And he sort of chuckled and he said, John, I guess as a kid, I saw one too many Frank Capra movies. Well, to me, that rang such a bell, because when I was a semi-orphan kid in Toronto, not having a home to go to, I would, aside from haunting hockey rinks, because I wanted to be a hockey player, of course, coming from Canada, I would haunt a theater. It was called the Manor Theater. For 5 cents, you could see movies. And the movies I loved the most were Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, anything made by Frank Capra. And that's where I fell in love, first of all, with movies, and I fell in love with America. So when Garrison said that to me, it just rang a bell. And of course, his very favorite quote, he used it all the time, is, John, I always thought, or I mistakenly thought I was still living in the country that I was born in. I mean, that is truly powerful. I have folks asking me all the time, John, there's a shadow government running our country, and we should name the shadow government. And I pointed out to them last week in a Facebook post that the shadow government is a government that we foolishly elect every 4 years, because the government we elect is not allowed to govern. And in the film, we asked Jim Garrison if the president runs the country. And you see him drinking a glass of water, and he almost spits it out as he starts to laugh. And he says, I did, until they murdered John Kennedy. And it is evident, as you say about 9/11, that the footprints left by what these people did in Dallas has led to all of these fake wars. The war with the Soviet Union, the Cold War, was the first fake war. Because as Garrison points out, he said, John, they lost 25 million people in the Second World War. They were no threat to us. We see that the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution was a false flag, admitted to now, but nobody brought to trial as a war criminal. And of course, we have the fake weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And Ole, I tell people, many of you should not watch my movie. And the reason you shouldn't watch it is you will hate me for telling you the truth, and Jim Garrison telling you the truth, because once you see the truth, you will realize you can do nothing about it. We have been turned into political inactive zombies by our media and government since they murdered John Kennedy. When everyone realized that George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Powell and Rumsfeld were all lying about weapons of mass destruction, millions of people took to the streets. No war, no war in Iraq. It didn't matter. They still went to war. They still went to war. These people are war criminals. There's no question about that. And, you know, during the Second World War, Harry Truman, who was the one who signed the act that created the CIA, on near his deathbed, he said it was the biggest mistake he ever made in his life. During the Second World War, there were hundreds of trials of American CEOs for war profiteering, and there were convictions. But nothing happened with George Bush and Condoleezza Rice and Halliburton. No such trials ever took place during that horrifying era. And now this fake war on terrorism, which Gore Vidal says is like a war on dandruff, it's never ending. It's just horrifying what has happened to America, and there is no way that it can be regained. Because Mark Twain said, if voting made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it. And that is entirely true. Every political scientist in America has admitted, since the murder of John Kennedy, we do not live in a democracy. This country was meant to be a republic. It's not even the democratic republic. Look at when they signed the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Blacks couldn't vote. Women couldn't vote. You had to own property to vote. All of the positive changes in America came about because people took the streets. But we are so turned into zombies now that we will never take to the streets, because there's no one to follow to take us to the streets. There's no outrage in America anymore. when I was interviewed by George Knapp yesterday, he's going to do a story about, because he could not have me on Coast to Coast because his boss, George Nouri, said I couldn't be on. He's going to do a story about me and the movie. I said to him, I said, George, you're a very prominent award-winning newsman. You have no influence. I mean, you may be able to say something on the local station, but you have no influence. Nobody has any influence in this country. I own General Motors stock. I get to vote on my stock, but I have nothing to say about the design of the car or how many miles the carburetor can get. And no American. This country is owned by the 1%. The 1% select the two dreadful candidates we get, and they leave it to us, the 99%, to vote them into office. It is a totally meaningless gesture. We open the movie with a picture of John Kennedy and his talking about the fact that we have to have an open flow of information in this country. And if we don't, it means the government fears its people. That is what has happened to this country. We close it with a picture of John Kennedy and John Kennedy saying, those who do not allow peaceful revolution make violent revolution inevitable. That is the only thing that will change this country. And I'll tell you, the easiest thing that could happen to America that would make it a nonviolent change is this. Repeal the Communications Act. This was signed by Bill Clinton, the worst president in American history. Back in 1963 in America, a company could only own 5 television stations, or 5 newspapers, or 5 radio stations. There were 1,500 different owners of television, radio station, and newspapers in America in 1963, which meant there was a great diversity of opinion in this country, some of it you didn't even want to hear, but it was protected by the First Amendment, which no longer exists because George Bush said it's just a goddamn piece of paper. So it means nothing to these people, okay? And what happened is that Clinton signs the Communications Act. Now 95% of all media is owned by only 6 corporations. Those 6 corporations are nothing but propagandists to continue fake wars for what has become the evil empire that Martin Luther King said it was at the Riverside Church in New York a year before they blew his brains out. But when I was talking to George Bush, I said, you name me one prominent American now who is a leader for peace that you admire and like. And he was speechless because they have shot them all. As Garrison says in the movie, they assassinate every day because they're very successful at it in America, even though the CIA was supposed to have nothing to do with anything going on in the United States. They were just supposed to gather foreign intelligence. But they now, there's a moment in the film that I like. It shows the map of the United States, USA. And then you hear 4 gunshots ring out and the USA changes to CIA. And that's exactly what it is right now. So it's never going to change. It will implode upon itself. Eventually. I mean, and look at this, Olay. It is so obvious. Iran never invaded anybody. As a matter of fact, back in 1954, the Iranians democratically elected a Professor Mossadegh who nationalized British petroleum, and Eisenhower and Alan Dulles murdered him because he was setting a bad example to the rest of the world. They went around the country, they went around the world murdering everyone else who was democratically elected, from Arbenz and to Chile. And so look at this. Iran never invaded anybody. North Korea never invaded anybody. Venezuela never invaded anybody. We invade everybody. 66% of the world's countries are occupied illegally by American troops. And Americans can't even recognize that. And if they recognize it, they defend what their country is doing. I mean, it is hopeless. The American sheep, the white sheep are by far the most cowardly and the most underinformed. And throughout history, only the black sheep in history make changes for the better in the world. Look at Jesus. He only had 12 disciples. Now there are billions of Christians, okay? And look at Castro. He only had a dozen people in his rowboat, and he created this terrific revolution in Cuba that got rid of the mafia and the gangsters and the hookers. I mean, the world is on the verge of a major breakdown caused by the United States of America.
Do you know, I spoke to CIA whistleblower Chip Tatum about these things, and he said the biggest terror tool in the world is the American army, the American military force, because just like you said...
Well, I didn't want to interrupt you, but Martin Luther King, when he spoke at the Riverside Church... Now, the reason they murdered Dr. King, and by the way, the gunshot that hit him in the chin at the Lorraine Motel did not kill him. He was smothered in the hospital. You read The Plot to Kill the King, a great book written by his attorney. Just an unbelievable book. In any event, the reason they killed him is that he realized all of a sudden it wasn't civil rights that they needed in America. It was economic rights. At his speech in Washington, D.C. about I Have a Dream. And by the way, you know, he never wrote that speech. That part of the speech, the original speech is owned by a very wealthy retired basketball player. And nowhere in that speech do you see the phrase, I have a dream. What happened is that while he was speaking, of course, he didn't expect it would be such huge applause and reaction and cheers to what he was saying. But at one moment when he paused, Mahalia Jackson leaned over to him and said, Martin, why don't you tell them what you told me about having a dream? He had told her this in private. So now in public, he says it. And of course, it becomes this historic speech. Military intelligence folks were atop the building looking down, and it's reported in The Plot to Kill the King, and they said no black man should have this much power in America. They said the same thing about Malcolm X when he stopped a riot of 100,000 blacks in New York City after the murder of Dr. King. Anyway, Dr. King was organizing a poor person's million man march on Washington, D.C., to talk about restructuring the economic breakdown of America, with the 1% getting too much, the middle class disappearing, and the poor getting too little. Of course, the 1% don't want that. And when he spoke at the Riverside Church, he said, I hate to say this, because the largest terrorist organization in the world is my government and the Pentagon. And a year later, they blew his brains out.
When you look at what happened after the JFK assassination in so many different areas, I would say that is where the madness started, almost like there was some, it was not just an assassination, it was a coup d'etat that took place that day, and the dark force that took over that day is still charging forward, just with a different face as a president, just exchanging the cover.
You're absolutely right, and as far as 911 is concerned, you know, I mentioned to you about millions of people marching to protest the fake invasion of Iraq. Well, when 9-1-1 happened, the first thing that Bush did was wanted to appoint Henry Kissinger, a known war criminal. There is a warrant for his arrest if he ever goes to France, a known war criminal. Christopher Hitchens wrote this brilliant book explaining why he and Nixon were war criminals for murdering Salvador Allende, a democratically elected president in Chile. Now, the media never protested this war criminal, as the case of Alan Dulles fired by John Kennedy because he had planned and encouraged this fake invasion of Cuba. Now he's appointed by LBJ as the first leading investigator in the Warren Report, which was held in secret for 9 months, and no protests from the media. But with 911, it was the families of the victims, the 3,000 victims that protested this war criminal. So Bush got rid of them. Now, Bush refused to testify under oath unless he could sit on Dick Cheney's knee like a puppet. And you cannot find any evidence anywhere of his testimony. Now, what happens is that they hold another war report-like investigation into 911. And they do not report at all or investigate the collapse of Building 7. Now, something interesting about Building 7, you may remember that before 911, 2 days before, Donald Rumsfeld goes on network news and he said, listen, there's $2 or $3 trillion missing from the Pentagon. We better investigate this. Well, guess where the files were to investigate this? They were in Building 7. Building 7 was not hit by a plane. It was only hit by smoke. And it collapsed just like the Sands Hotel did here in Las Vegas. There is no investigation into that collapse. The only lawsuit brought against NIST was by Dr. Judy Woods, who wrote this brilliant book called Where Did the Towers Go? When the buildings collapse, hundreds of tons of steel, when they hit the ground, the Richter scale registers the impact. If you look at, and she shows in the book, the demolition of the kingdom, she shows the Richter scale registering the impact. There is no impact in New York because the buildings had turned to dust. Now, I don't want to get into any other of these horrible things that the government has done or been involved in, because Dr. Judy Woods brilliantly does not say it's an inside job or Israelis did it or anybody else did it. She just said this is how it was done. This is how you can explain automobiles being on fire 2 or 3 blocks away, but no paper burned, and they find a passport of one of the supposed hijackers. I don't want to get into any of that. Obviously, Robert Kennedy, as you see in our documentary, was shot from behind and not from in front by Sirhan. And Dr. King was not shot by the guy that they accused him of shooting him. I don't want to get into all of that. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am simply a storyteller. The most important story in American history is the story of the murder of John Kennedy, and the only man who had the courage to investigate that murder and continue to investigate it, even though there were threats on his and his family's life, was Jim Garrison. You cannot name one American in history with the courage and the intelligence and the character of Jim Garrison. Not even my two idols of American history were Thomas Jefferson and Thomas Paine. So there you go. This movie that we made will outlast the movie JFK, will outlast any book that was ever written about this. This will last throughout history, and its impact will become more meaningful with each passing year.
I had the incredible pleasure of seeing it in the Texas Theater in Dallas with you when you were showing the preview, and especially the thing around the media made a very, very powerful impact on me. Could you tell us a little bit about how deeply involved media has been in this plot of maybe not the exact killing, but covering the whole thing up and making us all forget about the real event?
Well, you saw the rough cut in Dallas, which got a standing ovation, and 75% of the people who were there were not even born when John Kennedy was murdered. So that's a testament to the power of the story and the power of Jim Garrison on camera. If you saw it now, if you go to Amazon now and look at it, it's astonishing how well it's doing, and the unbelievable unsolicited reviews. But the chapter titles have been changed. It's in 10 chapters because it's 2 hours and 10 minutes. That's a long time for a documentary, but it absolutely and totally flies by. And the chapter titles are really brilliantly created by somebody other than by myself. So you should go to Amazon and take a look at it. And I made it only $1.99 so everybody could see it. But in the film, Jim Garrison says, I cannot name them or I won't name them, but there were elements of the media who had to assist the CIA in the murder of John Kennedy because they had to spread the fiction and the fantasy before the reality of the facts set in. And that's indeed what happened. But afterwards, everyone in the media circled the wagons to protect the known killers. And you see in the documentary, it's not me saying it, and it's not Garrison saying it. It is the Dan Rathers and the Walter Cronkites and Time Magazine and New York Times and the Washington Post, their own words and their own actions. Bury them and dig them a deeper hole in proving that they were involved in a conspiracy to cover up and protect the known murderers of the President of the United States. The media, as Garrison found out, was infiltrated in the 50s by a project called Project Mockingbird. This was created by the Central Intelligence Agency to take over the American media to create a foreign policy that would create continuous fake wars. We live in what George Orwell and Gore Vidal is a perpetual warfare state. And they infiltrated the New York Times and Time Magazine, even my favorite periodical, the Reader's Digest. It's all documented in the film. And so there it is. And I am enormously, enormously proud of that. And I'm telling you, we name names. And no one has sued us. Because the best of is the truth. I mean, it would be terrific if somebody sued us so we could get into a court of law. The facts are out there. Jim Garrison, again, I say, proved it. But there is nobody in a position in law enforcement today who will take the facts shown in the film and bring criminal charges against someone. Nobody. There is no one left in America like that anymore, at all. You know, we're a nation of bureaucrats. In 1970, when I interviewed Sergeant Shriver, I asked him, Mr. Shriver, what do lifelong bureaucrats, those who are in the military, those who are in the intelligence service, those who are even the post office, what do these lifelong bureaucrats think of a president who's only elected 8 years to office? And he smiled and he said, John, they only look upon him as a transitory civil servant. And the intelligence communities look at him as somebody who is expendable. And if he can't be voted out of office, he'll be shot out of office.
There is another person that I really admire that you interviewed as well, Fletcher Prouty. How was your meeting with him?
Fletcher is just, he's an enormous gift to history. And sadly, you know, I interviewed him for 2.5 hours. And when I moved from my former house to this house, I had lost those 2.5 hours of tape. And the reason I'm really sad is because I have a very, very dear friend, Leno Sonnick, designed the brilliant opening titles to the movie and contributed wonderful stuff to the editing of the film. And of course, he has tons of interviews with Fletcher Prouty, and I wanted to give him my interview with him on camera, but unfortunately I couldn't find it. So anyway, there you go. Ole, I want to thank you so much for having me on your show, or whatever it is that you do over there in Europe. I really enjoyed meeting you enormously in Dallas. I met a lot of really wonderful, wonderful people there. And I hope to meet you again. As a matter of fact, if I end up going to San Sebastian, if they accept the film there, if I end up going to Glasgow, I may just take a trip across to Europe and meet a few of the people who've been strong supporters of Jim Garrison and my two films.
That would be wonderful. You have an open invitation to my home. There's a guest bed here waiting for you. This interview, would it be okay for you if I use some sound file from the documentary and, you know, fade in and out some different parts from the documentary? Would that be okay?
Not only would it be okay, it would be brilliant. And I must tell you, that makes you a very, very, very smart producer. I'll tell you why. I have been interviewed 100 times, and all of the interviews just play what it is that I say. A couple of months ago, Public Radio in Los Angeles, station KPFK, and they call itself Radio for the 99%, which is a terrific slogan. Anyway, part of their fundraising campaign, they asked me if I would give them DVDs, which I'm not usually sending out, of this film. The movie was going to be screened, was being screened in Los Angeles at the Music Hall Theater. And what they were going to do is anybody who sent in $100 would get not only a ticket to the movie, they would get a DVD. And what I did is I came to L.A. She did an interview with me, but she did exactly what you're talking about doing. She took about 10 or 12 excerpts of Jim Garrison talking, of me talking, of other people talking, and interspersed it within the interview. And I must tell you, it was the most thrilling radio I ever heard since I heard Orson Welles' War of the Worlds back in the late 1930s. I mean, it was totally brilliant. And she was, and I told her, you were the first one, her name's Christine. I said, Christine, you're the first one smart enough to do that. That is totally unexpected. I'm going to tell you something, Ole. If you do that, it will quadruple the impact of this interview that you and I are having, because then you hear the actual words of Garrison and the actual words of Dan Rather or Walter Cronkite or myself. I mean, it's a really terrific idea. So feel free to do that.
Excellent. Listen, John, I just want to let you know that if you're outside the U.S., Amazon will not let you pay to hire or buy the DVD because it says you need a U.S. address and a U.S. credit card. And also Amazon.co.uk, they say the same, you need a British address and a British credit card. So there's no way that I can download it or rent it because I don't live there and my credit cards aren't registered. So there must be a lot of other people who are in the same situation. So maybe if you can find an
I'm getting a lot of Facebook messages and emails about that, but I read one today where a couple of people in the UK have been able to see it. And then I saw a note from somebody else on Facebook that said, if you buy an Amazon gift card, you can utilize that gift card to access the film. I don't know if that's true or not, but it'd be interesting if you would try it. It is available in Germany also.
Okay, it's just Amazon is messing with us, I think, because for the people in the UK, not a problem, because then you .co.uk, you can buy with a British credit card. But outside that, we can't. So I was thinking maybe if you can find other platforms like Vimeo or other where you can also charge per view or something like that, that would open up for millions and millions of other people as well. So please keep it in mind.
Well, you know, I'm trying to get it on Netflix and iTunes, but a lady who is really brilliant said that I should create a, what they call a Roku channel, R-O-K-U. I don't even know what that is. And maybe Vimeo or Hulu. Do you guys get Hulu in Europe?
No, not that I know of.
Well, if you could find out what platforms you get in Europe and let me know, I will put the film on that platform.
Excellent. I tell you, get it on Netflix. That is the thing. That will just make the whole thing explode.
Oh, it would. It indeed would. Anyway, Ole, thank you again so much for your support, your encouragement, your interest. We should do these little chats more often.
For sure. Before we end, John, can I please ask you to say, is there anything we can do to support you? Is there anything, how people can contact you or assist you in any way or form that will help you accomplish what it is you desire?
Okay, let's see. First thing, a lot of people would like to see the first Garrison tapes. If you go to YouTube/John Barber's World, YouTube/John Barber's World, you can see the first Garrison tapes for nothing. As a matter of fact, you can see a lot of really terrific stuff for nothing. If you want a DVD, now I'm not really selling DVDs, but I have a number of them left over. It was accepted for Oscar consideration about 3.5 weeks ago, and I had to send them 100 DVDs, and by mistake, I sent them like 300 or 400. I forgot. And they sent them back to me, so I have some left over. If they want to contact me, my email address is John Sarita. That's J-O-H-N. S-A-R-I-T-A, johncerita at AOL.com. And I would send them an autographed DVD, but I must tell them it's rather expensive. The DVD is $15, but the postage is like $20 or $25, so it's like $35 or $40. Now, certainly the movie is worth it, but, you know, a lot of folks don't have that kind of money. But if you want the DVD that much, that is how you can get it. And then again, Ole, you search around, you find out a platform that's available in Europe, and I will put it on that platform very inexpensively so everyone can see it.
Fantastic, fantastic. I really want to thank you for taking the time, John. And also, I just also want to do this interview with you in the honor and in the name of Jim Morris, which was, I thought, an absolute wonderful man. I so enjoyed meeting him, and I really miss him. It's such a big loss for us all.
It certainly is.
With that said, John, thank you, thank you. And let's do this soon again.
We certainly will, Ole. Thank you so much indeed. You have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you.
To listen to this full interview, just go to lightonconspiracies.com and subscribe. Give yourself the gift of truth and awareness while supporting Ole's hard efforts to get it out there.
D'etat in slow motion, connecting the dots between the assassinations of Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme, JFK, Robert Kennedy, and John Lennon. Now available on Amazon and lightonconspiracies.com. Coup d'etat in slow motion.
May the entire universe be filled with peace and joy, love and light. May everyone, and especially the ones who hurt us, be filled with peace and joy, love and light. Victory to that light.
Thank you.